A playlist original.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Back to the Blockbuster with your hosts, Gaius and Jackson. This is a news episode show. I apologize in advance for my voice. You'll be hearing two episodes at different points of the release schedule where I sound like this because we recorded two episodes today, and my voice has been to the ringer from a lot of stuff over the weekend. So bear with me. Jackson's bear with me. Actually, isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. No, all things considered.
And you've put up with my sniffles plenty of times, so this is nothing.
There we go. It's a very reciprocal.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Speaking of sniffling, though, I was doing some of that myself with our first news item. I'm sure you know, cinephiles and movie fans, especially Tarantino fans around the world, have probably heard by now. Be surprised if we're breaking the news for you, but. Definitely the first thing I wanted to throw out there today is earlier this week it was announced that Tarantino is no longer going forward with his 10th and final movie, The Movie Critic, as we know it. Now this news, I don't know about you, Gaius, like when you saw this first breaking, but all the channels that I follow that broke this, I was at the gym at the time, just kind of like on my phone in between a set. And they all worded it super ambiguously where I completely misinterpreted what this news was saying. And so it was worded like maybe you saw something similar, or I don't know if you saw something more in depth, but I just saw a thumbnail and it said Quentin Tarantino drops The Movie Critic as his 10th and final movie. And I, for whatever reason, maybe just I was like, it was like blind, like, you know, not really waking up. I thought it meant he kind of dropped the idea of it being his last movie, and that I read it as he's going to be doing more movies after The Movie Critic. And so I actually posted the thumbnail to my Instagram story, and I said something along the lines like that I was excited that I knew this was happening, that because I've said on the show, we've had this conversation, that I think he's got more than 10 in him. I don't get this whole 10 movie legacy idea that he has, and he's got so many more stories in him to tell. Anyway, it was very shortly after that I kind of realized this is not what this article is saying. He's actually no longer doing The Movie Critic. So was super cheesed to hear that news, but I wanted to know what your initial thoughts to that were, if you're more on board or how you reacted to that when you heard it, because I was definitely upset. I was looking forward to that a lot.
Well, I don't think you're too far off with how you interpreted it, because I think some people did interpret it that way, and I think that's been like the big topic of discussion is what does this really mean? Now he's not going to be doing The Movie Critic as his final film now. I didn't know that this film was going to be like Brad Pitt was rumored to be in it, and he was going to be playing his character Cliff Booth from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I didn't learn that news until the news of it not being his final film anymore. Once I actually got the news clarified, because I was kind of like you, where I was like, oh, cool, he's gonna make more movies. It then switched to, all right, maybe it's becoming, it has to be like psychologically really a hard thing for him to like, this is my final movie. I'm making this thing as my final movie. So there's like pressure on what that movie is going to be. And I kind of think that is maybe getting to him.
Yeah.
And I also think it's totally okay if he wants to walk back on that whole like 10 movie and retirement rule and just keep making movies until he can't anymore. I think the biggest examples I've seen about this is, imagine if Spielberg stopped at 10 or Scorsese stopped at 10.
Exactly.
And all the movies you wouldn't get after that. So I think that the whole 10 movie retirement plan is more of an ego thing rather than something he needs to stick to. And the idea that sounded really cool, and that's what I'm bummed we're missing out on, is that we're not getting this concept. But I'm kind of in the camp that maybe he is now doesn't want to maybe be 10 and done. Maybe he wants to do more. I mean, there's been a lot of narratives about what this means, and now, or maybe it's just like the pressure of what the 10th film should be. But anyway, I'm, and for my own personal feelings, I want to be in the camp that like, hey, maybe I got some more left in me. Whatever I make next doesn't have to be my 10th and final film. Let's see what else I got.
I know that he's weary of, you know, directors that direct for the remainder of their lives, and a lot with a lot of those the quality of their movies diminishes over time. You know, not a new phenomenon, happens more often than not, I would say. And I know that he really wants to avoid that trajectory for his career. And I understand that, kind of tying into what you said about it being his ego. He wants to end with that perfect legacy. But if I were, you know, a master of the craft to the degree that Quentin Tarantino is with making movies, I feel like he is one of those, of like any great filmmaker, makes, puts his heart and soul in every project, so that if you were to die the next day after your movie was completely filmed and completed, you would be okay with that being your final movie, because you just put all of your effort and your A game to that production. So who cares what number it is, you know, that project's done and over with, it's on to the next one. So I don't know. I get that he doesn't want to make movies forever and, like, you know, make lesser quality movies until he's 80 and preserve his legacy. But I mean, he's only 61 years old as of last month. Like, that's pretty young as far as filmmakers go. Not young, but, you know, a lot left in the tank. We've got some greats in their 80, well into their 80s. Even Clint Eastwood is in his 90s still making movies. So, like you said, that's a great comparison. Like, if Scorsese and Spielberg had never gone past 10, that would leave a lot of films off the table. So I think he's got a lot of stories left to tell. So, but I mean, I have faith in him, and I know whatever he does decide will be his last movie. It's going to be his decision, and I stand with him. It's just disappointing that we got so far in the production and the movie critic, just to kind of have it, the rug pulled out from under us. It was disappointing.
Yeah. And I think some people are becoming less sympathetic to his plan when you have Scorsese in his 80s, really, Scott, his 80s, you know, Steven Spielberg's up there too. Clint Eastwood, 94, just finishing directing a movie. And it's like, okay, I mean, I know there's reasons why I get the overall thought process behind, like, you know, that you might put out lesser work the longer you do it. But then some of these directors are still putting out great work well into their career. So maybe not, like, hold yourself to that. Like, after this all came out and everyone was talking about it, I was like, you know, I think some people in life hate to walk back on something they took a stance on. Like, this is what I'm going to do. But I was like, I think all of his fans would understand if he was like, you know, I changed my mind and I want to continue making movies. Yeah.
I
still got more in me, like, whatever. You know, when this news broke, I saw a lot of people on X, Twitter, being like, okay, well, then give us Kill Bill Volume 3. That's what we want. And there was a lot of speculation about what the 10th film should be. For someone that's just like a genius at his craft and an artist on that level, I would think that he's probably going through a lot in his head about what it should be. If he wants to keep it 10, about what that final project should be. And that has to be tough when you're as creative as he is. And you want to make sure you hit your final one out of the park. So I'm no Tarantino at all, but even as a writer in general, like, you want to put out your best work and you will stress and mull over what that is. And certainly, I'm sure he's probably doing that too.
Yeah, no doubt. It's got to get to you, like you said. More exciting, I guess. Yeah, disappointing for sure. But a more exciting news, and speaking on Scorsese. So I guess at this stage, this is a rumor. I'm curious to know if you have more insight on this. But supposedly he is trying to develop a Frank Sinatra biopic starring Leonardo DiCaprio, long-term collaborator of his. Love to see that. And Jennifer Lawrence co-starring with him. What stage of production is this at? Because I saw this, I just assumed that this was, you know, going forward. But is it not as concrete as you think?
I think at this point it's less of a rumor, and people are saying that he wants to do this. So he wants to do this coinciding with another project he's also developing, which might star Andrew Garfield, Miles Teller. They're being rumored for roles in this other project he's doing. He wants to shoot these things back to back if he can. And for his Sinatra pick, like you said, he wants DiCaprio as Sinatra, and he wants Lawrence as his second wife, Ava Gardner. Just because of who's involved in it, they said the film is drawing interest from the major studios. Being Apple is another one that wants to collaborate with him again after Killers of the Flower Moon. But Sony is in the lead for it if they do it. The big snafu here is that Sinatra's daughter, Tina Sinatra, controls her father's estate, and she hasn't given her blessing for the project yet.
Okay.
So that could be what holds it back. I mean, I'm sure if Scorsese can pitch something to her that is respectful to her father's legacy, then maybe she'll sell off.
I couldn't think of better hands for your father's legacy to be in than Martin Scorsese trying to develop a biopic of him. So I would be, if I were me, I mean, obviously I can't, that doesn't mean anything, but you know, I would be okay with him directing the movie about me if I was her, but interested to see what becomes of that. And if she eventually kind of gives her blessing, I think that is, he's the right filmmaker to tell that story. And Leo, he's one of my favorite, I think at a time, my favorite actor, and probably still in my heart of hearts he is, but I mean, his last couple performances, you know, I don't think met his star power. I'm looking at like Don't Look Up, and even in Killers of the Flower Moon, fantastic movie all overall, and he does great, but it wasn't, I don't think, the DiCaprio like that I know tier. And love, his top tier. But I think he would be fantastic as Frank Sinatra. That is really, really great casting. So really hope that project moves forward, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I saw some mixed reactions to it. I saw people being like, that's great casting. Other people being like, that's wrong.
Do you have somebody better in mind? Like, just curious.
I don't. Like, he looks the part to me. Some people think he might be too old now to do it. Maybe it would have worked out better when he was younger. I mean, I still think he looks it and convey it. Now,
I don't think
he can sing, so I guess he would be lip syncing if he did it.
I'd be okay with him lip syncing. I wouldn't, I wouldn't want that to jeopardize that performance.
But the good thing about this news, which is glad that we piggybacked off the Tarantino news, is that whatever happens here, Scorsese is trying to shoot two movies back to back, and he's 81, I think. He still wants to work, and he also has other projects in development. He's producing that Cape Fear limited series with Spielberg. He is busier than ever.
He's doing back to back with this.
So let me pull it up real quick. It is, one second. It's called based on the book called Life of Jesus. The guy who wrote the book also wrote the book Silence, and he made that into a movie.
Okay.
But he really wants to get started on that later this year. It's supposed to shoot in Israel, Italy, and Egypt. And Andrew Garfield is in talks to be in it, and so is Miles Teller. So, yeah, back-to-back movies.
I like the sound of that. I love Silence, too, so that's a good pairing. Yeah.
So yeah, I hope it comes together though. And if they pitch something really good to Tina Sinatra, I think she might give her blessing if it is a respectful look at her dad's life.
Well, hopefully.
Alrighty, we have so the news about this in general is surprising to me. Now I don't know if I'm in the minority here, but I actually like the Now You See Me movies. They're just fun. Shut your brain off at the door, and the cast is great. But I had no idea they were even developing a Now You See Me 3. And like, they are truly developing a Now You See Me 3. Much of the original cast is already returning, but they're filling in the spots with new people as well. Ariana Greenblatt, who was in Barbie, she was America Ferrera's daughter in that.
Mm-hmm.
She's been cast. Dominic Sessa, who was in The Holdovers, he's been cast as well. And Justice Smith, who was going to be seen next. I saw the TV glow, and he was in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Mm. Really cool up-and-coming young cast to be thrown in with the more veteran ensemble cast that's already been established across the two movies. I mean, these movies apparently have made a lot of money worldwide, which is why we're getting another one. This feels like the Now You See Me movies feel like undercover blockbusters. Like, when you think, I never hear people really talk about them a lot. That is why I'm surprised they're making the third one. But I personally enjoy them. They're fun. But what do you think about them making another one and adding these people to the cast?
I guess I'm not surprised to hear that there's a third one in development, because from what I understand, I never really gelled with that series. I only saw the first one, and it wasn't for me, and I didn't bother seeing the second one. I might have seen parts of the second one with some buddies one time, but I kind of just we were just kind of hanging out rather than focusing on the movie, so I can't really say I've seen it. Cass is great, but I just didn't really care for it. I'm also really hit or miss with the director of the third one, Ruben Fleischer. Like, he's done great movies like Zombieland, and there was something else I saw here. He's got a really great bang in comedy from the early 2010s with 30 Minutes or Less, and he's done some good stuff. But then he's also pumped out. He did Venom, the Uncharted movie, which was kind of mixed. So I'm kind of like not really sure what I think about him directing it. I know I won't go out of my way to see it. And as far as the cast goes, Dominic Sessa, great. I would rather see him kind of go towards other things, but as an up-and-comer, don't blame him for going for this role. Ariana Greenblatt, like, for all intents and purposes, I didn't, like, I thought her character, like, she did a good job in her role in Barbie. That's all I've seen her in. And then all I've seen Justice Smith in is in Fallen Kingdom, and I really didn't like his character. So I don't know what I think about him as an actor yet. I got to see him in some other stuff. However, really have my eye on his one of his latest with I Saw the TV Glow. So I
that looks really good,
Yeah. I know it's not out yet, is it?
Not yet, not wide yet.
Excited for that though, and to see what he brings to the table in that movie too, because that is super promising. And that was one of those movies where I stayed away from the trailer because I heard it gives a lot away. So I don't know what to expect exactly, but you know what? Good for him and for, you know, staying consistent with the work. But this one is a miss for me. I'm not really on board with the Now You See Me's, but oh well, if people like them, good for them. And that's great that we're getting a third installment and that the other two seem to be successful. So I guess at this point, looking at Ruben Fleischer, I'm kind of like, this is a toss-up. I don't really know what to expect for the reception for this movie. But are you excited with the cast and everything, liking the first two movies?
I mean, I like the first two movies. I like the addition of the new people. And I'm glad that, you know, Jesse Eisenberg and Woody Harrelson, they said Isla Fisher is probably going to come back. She wasn't in the second one. It was Lizzie Kaplan, but they're saying that she'll be in the third one. Dave Franco. It's just a fun cast.
And Mark Ruffalo, I think he's attached.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo, yeah. I'm not saying that the movies are like high art or anything.
For sure. There's value in just entertaining movies too.
Yeah, I just thought they were fun. But like I said, I had no idea that the third one was even in development, and it's moving along quite nicely. It is cool. I know what you're saying about Dominic Sessa, but it's cool to see that he is really breaking out and picking up roles post the holders.
Exactly.
Now, he can do his whole, like, you know, mainstreamy studio movie sequel and get that out of the way and maybe focus on something more poignant. So there you go.
Totally.
Yeah.
This next one was news to me. I've never seen The Naked Gun, but I know that it's being rebooted, and I feel like I've seen that Liam Neeson was attached to it, but Pamela Anderson just joins the cast as well. Or were they cast at the same time, or was she like the most recent addition?
No, she's the most recent, and he's been attached to it for a while. I think other big actresses were actually, I think, vying for that part, and they chose her. And it's interesting because the Naked Gun movies are fun. They're like, they're spoofs based on like a TV show called Police Squad, and they turned that into a series of movies. And they're really like spoof satire projects with like Leslie Nielsen, which are, they're hilarious. Yeah. At least the first one.
Leslie Nielsen is very funny. God tier funny for sure.
Yeah. By the way, it also featured in the film is O.J. Simpson, all three of them, I believe, prior to the whole like murder thing and all that.
Interesting.
So that's an interesting background, and they're kind of beloved comedies. Pamela Anderson, I mean, it's not like she's not known a lot for her acting, but she was on, I think, 110 episodes of Baywatch, which is still to this day, I think, the most successful syndicated show in the history of television, just based on how many places it airs and all that, and it continues to air all over the world.
Okay.
She also has done some films, but none of them are like great. She's in Barbed Wire. She's in Scary Movie 3 and Superhero Movie.
Funny.
But those last two movies have in common is that they're both spoofs, satire. So she has like the comedic chops, I think, to sell what they need her to do, that you really don't really necessarily need like A-list top tier actress to maybe do it. So if she's going to be funnier than like casting someone that on paper is a stronger actress, then I think it's interesting that they went with her, and we'll see what she can do opposite Liam Neeson. I think that's kind of, I feel one way or another about them rebooting it. I know Seth MacFarlane is behind it producing wise, so that's kind of
okay.
But yeah, there were a lot of comments online about them casting her because her perceived lack of acting ability. But if it's a fun, like loose comedy, I'm sure she'll be fine.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think Liam Neeson can be really funny too. And he's another long collaborator of Seth MacFarlane, who I think is one of the great comedians working. So I guess I have some hope for it. I'm with you too, where like, I don't have an attachment to the Naked Guns. So I can't really say that, like, it, you know, the remake pisses me off or the reboot, but I would say, you know, another sign of a lack of creative innovation in Hollywood, which is rampant. So, you know, I guess it adds that to the conversation. But oh well, I guess we'll see how that all unfolds. I would like to, you know, I think the Naked Guns have kind of like crept up my watch list here soon, because I'm a big fan of Leslie Nielsen and the little I've seen from him, and he's really funny. So yeah, this brings attention to that at least. This next bit of news troubles me. This is something I kind of mentioned off camera that I wasn't familiar with. I didn't hear this news. Tell us a little bit about what you know about Sony Pictures and their business with Paramount. This is sending off alarm bells in my head right now.
So this acquisition news has been going around for a bit. There are, I guess, another company too that is trying to acquire Paramount Pictures. But Sony threw their hat in the ring. They said they've been in talks with Apollo Global Management to work on acquiring Paramount. It's interesting because this got thrown in there, but they said also Skydance Redbird Capital has also been in exclusive talks with Paramount Global's majority shareholder National Amusements to take control of the studio. They said the Sony play for Paramount is an all cash one for outstanding stock in the studio, which would make them private via the joint venture. Apparently Apollo is doing most of the heavy lifting and Sony is acting more as like a, with lending their management expertise to that acquisition. But I think a lot of people don't like this news because, hey, we need more studios in general. And then if they start to like swallow each other up, I think that's bad for us. I mean, maybe not bad for business, but bad for, you know.
Well, I mean, bad for people that, you know, want, you know, variety in the industry, and just as the screams, it's another move towards, you know, movie media monopolization, which is a bad for everybody, I think. And then that just lends less options for us as viewers in the future. So very alarming. I didn't know anything about this. I'm not sure if we ever talked about Paramount being shopped around. That doesn't ring a bell to me. So this was news for even me, as much as it is the listeners that hadn't heard this either. Usually I have a little bit of insight about what we're talking about, but this one threw me for a loop. So that is alarming.
We've seen this already with, like, you know, when Disney acquired 20th Century Fox, and that, I mean, I guess there are pros to that, but then you have all these 20th Century properties like get, you know, swallowed to the Disney mold. Like you have Alien and all that, you know, and it's like, will they lose their luster under one banner? I mean, there's a lot of,
then you
that goes into them. Yeah, why people are afraid when these things happen.
A lot of times with mergers of this, you know, pedigree, there are projects that were being developed under one studio that are now canceled when they move under the management of another. So there could be things that we think we're going to get in a couple of years if this goes through that we might get shelved. There's something that really bothers me with the Disney acquisition of Fox is that some of these Fox titles don't get a physical release. Like for instance, like Barbarian, like still something we don't have a physical copy of. So
yeah.
I don't know if Sony is a big offender of that, if that'll be an issue, if they kind of obtain Paramount's rights and stuff, but something, I don't know. I think there's just a lot of room for negativity there. Some bad, you know, negative things that I don't know, who knows, that there's a lot remains to be seen on the repercussions of something like that. So, but we'll be keeping our eyes on that one for sure as that develops. I don't know, obviously, what things are like behind the scene, how close that is to getting some ink on the dotted line, but interesting story, to say the least.
Oh, hopefully not. But if it does happen, we'll definitely let you know. And honestly, Paramount Pictures on its own is a very good studio. I think a lot of people are like, it's a movie-focused studio that they really don't want to see get eaten up by another entity. So I think that's why a lot of people are also against it. And like I said, people are like, the more studios we have, the better. It gives us more variety. So I'm not a fan either, but we will keep you up to date on if anything happens with it. With this next bit of news, I feel like that we're going to surprisingly be talking about the Blair Witch Project way more than I thought we would this year.
Yeah, definitely.
So we mentioned last week that they are making Blumhouse's reimagining it for a new film. And I think we mentioned during the episode, I said one of the actors was very disappointed with the announcement of the project and went into detail about like how they, the original actors on that movie were treated, especially financially. And it looks like they're trying to get a piece of meaningful pie from the Blair Witch Project, because they said that the Blair Witch Project cast is asking Lionsgate for retroactive residuals and meaningful consultation on future projects. The directors and producers of the groundbreaking 1990 horror film released a separate statement in support of the actors. They, we believe the actors deserve to be celebrated for their enduring association with the franchise. And they want these originals to go all the way back to 1999. So that's a lot of...
wow, that'd be quite the payday.
Yeah, and they want to be consulted on any future Blair projects, which include this Blumhouse one that they're developing.
So,
you know,
I want to dive into that a little bit. I am obviously completely on board with them being compensated for, you know, it sounds like, and this was all news to me too when we discussed it, but they definitely got screwed over in terms of their financial compensation for their work and just their likeness used in the promotion of that franchise for years and years, since decades now. It's a couple decades old. I'm a little curious what they expect about being consulted on future Blair Witch Project movies. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary.
I think that's stepping over a line a little bit there. I just think that's kind of a bold ask.
It almost reads like, at least ask for our permission before you do anything new.
I don't think that's a right that they have.
I will dive into a little bit of the backstory. Because Joshua Leonard, who was in the original, he said at this point, it's 25 years of disrespect from the folks who've pocketed the lion's share of the profits from our work. And that feels both icky and classless. And they said that Leonard said that the actors who shot and improvised the independent movie over roughly a week on a shoestring budget, using their real names for the characters, each paid $300,000 from a buyout of their ownership points on the film, which went on to gross $248 million worldwide. In 2002, the actors sued Artisan Entertainment for using their names and likeness in the 2000 sequel, Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. In their most recent statement, Leonard Williams and Donahue call on Lionsgate to provide them with retroactive and future residual payments equivalent to the sum that would have been allotted through SAG-AFTRA had we had proper union or legal representation when the film was made.
Well, can't argue with that argument.
Yeah. And I get their point. Totally. I just wonder how much, like, I don't know about the legal part of this, if they have like a leg to stand on as far as getting what they want.
Yeah.
But I do agree with that first part. The consultation on future Blair Witch Project seems, I mean, they didn't write it, the original movie, so like I don't know, they just appeared in it.
Yeah.
But I do believe that they should be compensated fairly for their work, and because a lot of other people made a lot of money using their likeness. And like I said, that Joshua Leonard in that same post said that one of the actors had to go back to working at a furniture store while the Blair Witch Project is making a lot of money in theaters in 1999.
That's a slap in the face.
Yeah. So honestly, I do hope they do get their fair share of that Blair Witch pipe. Yeah.
Well, if anything, let that story be a warning to any maybe up and comers or people, novices to the industry, to show up when you're signing things, have good union and legal representation, and make sure you don't find yourself in that kind of position. Because that would be very disheartening to go through all this time knowing you probably should be compensated for your work and not really having the legal background to back you up and support you through that, because that is definitely unfortunate. And I'm sure they're probably not the only victims of stuff like that. Studios in it for themselves. And I'd be curious to know, you know, who sort of maybe could have helped them out along the way that didn't, and you know, definitely a crappy story for them.
There are a lot of victims of, you know, not seeing the fine print
when you're young,
especially signing contracts. We hear about that all the time across all kinds of professions. So yeah, I agree with you. It's a cautionary tale for anyone getting into this this business. Because, you know, you could be in a position 25 years later trying to fight for what you think you deserve. And I honestly hope that they do get at least something. They may not be a huge payout, but I guess even like when you're negotiating, right, you kind of start high so you can start working your way to a middle ground somewhere.
Right.
So I hope they get, you know, a little something for their troubles, at least.
Absolutely. Next up, we got two trailers dropped this week, and I'll lend it to you to see which one you want to tackle first. Both very different and entertaining, and coming out this year, I believe both are.
Yeah.
But we were talking about M. Night Shyamalan's next movie, Trap, and of course, Deadpool and Wolverine had another trailer drop that's coming out in July. But which one did you want to dive into first?
I guess we could lead with like what the kids probably want first: Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. It came out early this morning. I woke up first thing in the morning and watched it. It looks fun. I'm picking out what they're putting down. Like, I love the tone and vibe of it. For anyone worried that Disney was not going to keep their word about maintaining the R-rated nature of the Deadpool movies, it's given away fairly quickly that they are keeping their word. It is a curse-filled trailer with a lot of action. It looks like a lot of violence too. And there's a lot going on in it. I will say kudos, because there's a lot of rumors about all these cameos that are going to happen in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that they didn't give any of those away.
I gotta admit, I'm impressed with the restraint they've shown lately. So
yeah, this was like, what was this, like 2 minute and 27 second trailer, and they didn't show any of that. So
what's the song they use in this trailer? Because I thought that was a great pairing too.
It's Like a Prayer by Madonna. So
yes, Madonna. I couldn't pinpoint who's singing it.
Which is an absolute banger, in case you guys have never heard Like a Prayer by Madonna. And a lot of trailers lately, I've been using remix like versions of 80 songs in their trailers, and this is another good example of good music
going along. So with great. It was a great decade of music too. So I'd love to see that it's getting some love in movie marketing, because two things I love the most going hand in hand. A good song paired with a good trailer can make it so much better. And I really think the song pairing with this trailer, elevated it, if you will.
What were your feelings after watching it? You just watched it right before.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that it had come out today, just didn't make the time to watch it. But my only thing that I'll add, because I completely agree with everything you'd said, but I don't know if anybody else feels this way, and feel free to let us know if you do. There's something about Hugh Jackman's like delivery in this trailer alone, more than the first one, that I just didn't feel like. I just thought I expected a little bit more enthusiasm from him. And again, this is just all marketing. I might not feel this way seeing him on the screen, but he's just got a couple of lines throughout that trailer that I just didn't really feel like he was giving it his all. And I know that he had, it's been a few years now since he supposedly hung up the claws after James Mangold's Logan, and now he's back. And part of me now is thinking like, is he taking this? Is this just a paid gig? Is he really passionate about coming back as Wolverine? And I like to think that he is. And him and Ryan Reynolds are buddies. And there's been some good non-trailer related promo for the movie. But I'm just not really convinced after seeing that I think that he is in it to win it. I don't know. And I could completely understand. This might not be the case once the movie comes out. Trailers often, don't exactly show us the reality of a movie. So maybe I'm just spitballing here, but if anybody else feels like that, I would like to feel validated. But did you get it at all? Or are you like, no, he's all in it. Like, this is, they're both completely committed.
I can kind of see what you're saying. I think a lot of maybe I don't feel 100% what you're saying, but I get what you're saying. And I think a lot of it has to do with, I think that character had a fitting conclusion in Logan. And I know there's like a reason that they're bringing him back for this. And
that's a big part.
And I get the appeal of bringing him back, because he's so associated with that character. And I know that Ryan Reynolds pitched him a really good idea to come back at least for this one. And I don't know how much more he'll do after this. But Logan was such a good wrap up for that character. That
phenomenal.
I know that James Mangold has said that directed Logan. He said that it feels like it cheapens the conclusion of that movie to bring him back for this.
I kind of feel that way too.
Yeah. And I'm sure I think other fans feel that way as well. But, it's supposed to be like a fun kind of take on multiverse story. So, maybe this multiverse version of Logan is just old and weary and not 100% invested. I don't know.
Perhaps. That's a whole other thing to consider, is the multiverse.
Yeah. But for those that they released a little bit of a plot synopsis, but I'm sure there's more to it. They said, the Time Variance Authority, a bureaucratic organization that exists outside of time and space and monitors the timeline, pulls Wade Wilson Deadpool from his quiet life and sets him on a mission that will change the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is also their only release this year, which is, I think, a good thing.
Yep.
They need a little bit of a break in the reset. I have a feeling this movie's going to make a lot of money. And if it is as good as people think it's going to be, it'll bring a lot of goodwill back to the MCU that they probably lost over the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
Like, you're not 100% all in Marvel, so where do you stand on wanting to even see this?
Admittedly, I'm only really in the, I've seen the first two Deadpools, and I like that they are standalone, not part of the MCU. That was a draw for me. I didn't have to do any research and see anything else to go into this one. I don't love that it's tied into the MCU, but I think, you know, to counter that, having Hugh Jackman in as classic Wolverine is, you know, a big draw for me. So I'm a little bit, you know, with exceptions aside, I'm just sort of like worn out on the superhero, you know, feat that has kind of ruled cinemas for the last 10-15 years. So beyond, like, you know, Matt Reeves' Batman was an exception, Todd Phillips' The Joker, another exception. There's definitely some that I will make the effort to go see. I anticipate I'll go see Deadpool 3, and a big part of that too is that I feel like I'm not like constantly being bombarded with superhero movies this year. So it's not, I think it's a great move that they're just, this is their only release. Good on them to take a step back. I don't know if that was all necessarily by design, or if it was more of a release dates having to get switched up because of the strikes and pandemic and shooting delays and all that. But however it worked out, it's, for people that might be feeling the same way as me, I'd be curious to know if anybody else felt more willing to go see it because of that. I am looking forward to it. I like what I see for the most part so far. And I think it'll be a good summer release to go see before my most anticipated summer release with Alien Romulus comes out. It'll be a nice July time of the movies. So yeah, I'm all right with it though overall.
And we'll get to find out on July 26th when Deadpool and Wolverine open. So our next trailer is for Trap, a new movie from M. Night Shyamalan. They released his trailer last week. I really liked the trailer. I had no idea what this movie was going to be about.
I didn't know this was in development.
Because the synopsis that has been released for the movie is just a man and his daughter attend a pop concert where they realize they're at the center of a dark and sinister event. That it was the only thing that they're releasing until the trailer came out. And when the trailer had the reveal about the whole Josh Hartnett, the dad, who said his daughter to a concert, is a serial killer. And the cops believe that he's in, that the serial killer is in attendance at this concert, and they set a trap to trap him there so they can catch him. I was just surprised that was the angle that they took with it, and then that made me more excited to want to see it because I thought that was a really interesting setup for a movie. I just saw your face.
No. The reason I make this face is because I also think this is a really, really cool original idea for what seems to be pitched as a horror movie, and it's M. Night Shyamalan, which would fit his MO. But what also would fit his MO, I feel like what we are getting in classic M. Night Shyamalan fashion will not be what we get. He is, you know, probably the director most synonymous with the twist. So I feel like there is more at play here. I feel like we are being fed something that might not be reality. And I'm guilty for falling for that. I don't know. And maybe he won't. Maybe we are kind of getting a straightforward look at what the plot will be. But I don't think that we have been shown quite everything yet. And I think there's more to come with this movie. But that being said, I really liked the trailer. I think it was very interesting. And whether this movie joins the 50% of his movies that are poorly received and objectively bad, or the other 50% that are great, props to him for, you know, still continuing to make, produce, direct original horror movies. So that is, he's doing something that very few people are able to do, and has been doing it for a couple of decades now. So regardless of how what the end result is, gotta give credit to the man. He is still doing it, and I want the, you know, the success for this movie. I also love Josh Hartnett in a back in a horror movie. I think that's great too. He's built up a great rapport with him in that genre over the years, so looking forward to it, to say the least. I didn't catch a release date for this movie though.
August 9th.
Okay, nice. August not notoriously a great month for releases, but maybe, you know.
But Aliens is there too, so.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm also glad that Josh Hartnett seems to just been having this career resurgence in the last few years, where he just has been popping up in a lot of stuff. But yeah, I just love the setup. It looks interesting. And I, you know, I don't think they would, if that would be the only twist they give away. So I kind of think there's more to it. Yeah. And what we're seeing. I know some people were upset that they gave that twist away, but that's just the hook.
And yeah.
It might be more to the hook.
There you go. Yeah. You never know with this guy.
All righty. Let's get us some box office. I already know I was way off with Abigail. I just want to point that out.
I don't even remember what we said last week. I'm pulling out the old book here.
By the way, I saw it on Thursday. It's so much fun and it was so good and entertaining. I hope that it finds a proper audience. And yeah, are you interested in seeing it at all?
Absolutely. It might be something I bring my girlfriend to. Cam and I might watch it too, but I know the next movie we have in our schedule is Late Night with the Devil, just came to Shudder, and you also sent it to me too, which I appreciate. Yeah. So that, I know that won't be until probably the following week if I do get to see it, but I do have a buddy visiting from out of town that is, you know, like casually into movies. We might make the time to go to the theater and see something that very well might be what we want to see. I don't want to miss the chance to see it in theaters, so it's just a matter of who I go see it with. If I have to go see it by myself, wouldn't be the first time either, so I will see it. Glad that it has your endorsement, but how did it do? I have our numbers here. You had guessed that it would hit 20 million at its opening weekend, and I went 21 and a half. So where did we lie?
So the only reason I'm winning is because I was slightly lower. It opened in second place to $10.2 million.
Oh, that's it, hey? Oh, boy.
I don't really know. A lot of people are pointing to the fact that horror comedy is a lot more comedy in it than I guess the trailer gives away. I mean, yeah, it's funnier than it appears to be.
Okay, good.
And sometimes that doesn't sell well with everyone, like blending other genres, because it got a B cinema score, which is like okay for horror, but it's on the cusp of being like indicating a mixed response. Only a $28 million budget. So I mean, if there is a loss, it won't be much, and maybe you can recoup that internationally. So we'll see. Civil War is still number one with 11.1 million. It has grossed 44.8 million domestically, and I believe 49.4 million worldwide so far. So it still has some ways to go.
To
recoup that $50 million budget. But I think they're in a good spot to at least break even with Civil War.
I'm surprised the movie's not I mean, it's great that it's still number one in the box office, and I'm sure everyone at the studio is happy with that, but I just would have thought that it'd have surpassed that profit margin by now, which is disappointing, I guess, for it. But I guess, you know, it's still, I guess it's up against some, you know, a big contender this week as we look at challengers. I think this has it in it to
really break out.
Break out and dethrone Civil War.
As you know, if you've been listening, Jackson does want to see it, but I think I've been the one that's like, I really want to see this movie.
Without a doubt, this is definitely high on your list, and I am excited for it as well.
And I was just more encouraged by currently, you know, a few days before it's opening right now, it is still sitting with a 95% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh boy.
With 96 reviews counted, everyone saying that this is Luca's best film to date. The score has also been getting a lot of props from Trent Reznor and Agnes Ross. The trio, the cast has been getting a lot of raves, but Zendaya in particular for convincingly playing a more adult role, because she has for the most part been playing high school people and she's 27, I think.
Yeah.
But they say that she plays it convincingly and that it is a really good relationship, kind of like, is this melding of like the sports genre and there's a lot of things going on in it that I guess give it a lot of layers. And I'm excited to see it. They did say that this will prove her box office potential because she's carrying it all by herself.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
That's right.
Not to give the other guys who are in it. Yeah.
But you're right. It's a Zendaya vehicle, without a doubt. And another trailer that had awesome song mix up with it too. That was a really, really awesome trailer. Sold me. I mean, the cast and director alone had me intrigued and wanting to see this because I'm a big fan of Luca Guadagnino's other films. But that trailer, when that trailer dropped, I was like, okay, I am fully on board. This looks as good as I was hoping it would be.
Yeah. And before I give you the tracking, they said that it looks like the movie is already over indexing, especially on social media. There's a lot of awareness for it, based mostly around her.
Okay.
But it, it has been building to, you know, as the release date has gotten closer. It kind of reminds me of very different movies, but I remember when before Hustlers opened in 2019, and that movie was tracking at like 17 million. That was the Jennifer Lopez, like, I hate to call it a stripper movie, because it's actually a lot better than that. And,
yeah, I know what you're talking about, though.
But everyone underestimated how much it was actually over-indexing, like, with, like, the urban market. It, like, it was really really attracting, like, a wide variety of demographics. And that ended up opening to $30 million, and it well exceeded opening weekend expectations. And this low end for Challengers is 17. Okay. The high end is 30.
Oh my goodness, what a gap.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I
don't know, man.
This is definitely your anticipated movie. So for that reason, I'm gonna let you go first. All right. I mean, that's a $13 million gap. That is that'll make things interesting.
Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna go with $25 million.
Oh, damn it. If you hadn't said that, I probably would have. Yeah, I like that. Just considering that Civil War grossed $11 million and it was the number one, and Abigail only brought in 10, I'm gonna go on the low. I mean, that's why I'm gonna go below 25. I would be over the moon if this movie reaches the high end of its tracking. But just for the sake of keeping things interesting, I'm going to go with $22 million. So that's a $3 million gap between us. Should make things interesting come next week.
Yep, I agree. And I'll probably be messaging your ear off after I see it.
Yeah, so, which when are you going to see that?
Actually, Wednesday.
So, Wednesday? Oh, okay, fantastic.
Yeah, so, you know, then. So you'll know then.
Okay.
About it, but yeah.
Looking forward to that Letterboxd review. And by the way, for anybody listening that maybe is new to the app or looking for some other people to follow on there, both Gaius and I are pretty avid Letterboxd people. It's been actually a really great tool for me to remember and keep track of what I've been watching lately, and, you know, to reliably score my movies. I've been really enjoying using that app a lot. So maybe if you guys are into movies, if you're listening and don't have the app, it definitely has my endorsement. Gaius, I think I speak for both of us when I say that. Excited to see what you have to say about Challengers. Aside from our own conversation, what you put out there as a review too, because I always enjoy reading what you write, because you're a very talented writer, and excited very much for that. I have a little bit of a review for something, a little secret. I would have liked to have led the episode with this, but I forgot to mention it. So I'm going to save this for a future episode. But you'll see my Letterboxd review. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you see it. But anyway, we will leave you guys our info where to follow us on that. If there's nothing else, I believe we've covered everything that we had for this episode. You guys are still listening. This has been episode 168 of Back to the Blockbuster. Thanks for joining us as we broke down the last week and a half so of news. Always happy to have you listening to us, however you guys do it. Remember, you guys can always check us out anywhere you guys get your podcasts, whether that be Apple, Google, Spotify. Of course, for those of you that don't have us on playlist. I was trying to say the word network. Playlist, our podcast network. They have their own app available from both major phone app stores. So definitely check us out on there. Anywhere on social media where you guys get your podcast, you can find us there. And make sure, if you guys have friends that like this sort of content, make sure you guys shout out Back to the Blockbuster. Gaius, always a pleasure breaking down the news and movies with you, my friend. I will see you on the next episode. And you guys take care of yourselves until next week.
Peace.